is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are tipping off our NBA pod with Jason's minute-by-minute, second-by-second recap of Nets-Celtics tonight.
Well, I'm not going minute-by-minute, second-by-second, but I just want to lay this out for you. I turned the game on, I want to say, first 2-3 minutes of the fourth quarter, and the whole reason that I put the game on is I was getting ready for the Sixers-Lakers game. Not really anticipating paying any attention to the Celtics-Nets game because it was over. It was over, Mike. I mean, I think it was at one point it was like a 21-point game, like not even close. And so fourth quarter happens, and all of a sudden Caris LeVert just starts going nuts, Mike. I think he had 25 in the fourth quarter or 23 in the fourth quarter.
Like, he didn't get to Sleepy Floyd though.
No. So we're going into the fourth quarter. The Nets were down 17 points, okay? The Nets scored 51 points in the fourth quarter, Mike.
That's a lot of points.
51 points. The Celtics scored 34 in the fourth quarter, but the Nets scored 51. But the best was in the last 10.6 seconds, okay? There's no reason. You're up five. Boston's up five. 118-113 with 10.6 seconds left. Okay, here's what happens. They let the ball inbound. Brooklyn calls a timeout, pass the ball in. Caris LeVert drives to the lane. Throws up an alley-oop. It wasn't DeAndre Jordan, but I don't remember who it was. It might have been I don't remember who it was. But anyways, they score an alley-oop, whatever. Boston calls a timeout. I swear to God, Mike, the guy stepped over the passing line after the timeout. They didn't call it. They didn't call the violation because the guy ended up supposedly calling a timeout before his foot made contact with the ground, but it was looked very clear to me that the boss, whoever was inbounding, and I want to be clear here, Jason Tatum didn't play, Mike. I don't know if you know.
Yeah,
that.
He was out. I know he was out sick with, or something. He had an illness. I saw.
So he didn't play. So, and Kemba Walker came back and whatever, and Kemba didn't really have a good game, but regardless, they ended up calling a timeout. Boston gets the ball back. He throws it into Kemba. Brooklyn's clearly trying to foul, Mike. But the official calls a jump ball. Okay, so it's Kemba Walker versus a 6'11".
Is that reviewable?
I don't know. They didn't review it, so I'm guessing not.
All right.
Okay, so 6'11 versus Kemba. Well, we knew what was going to happen. Brooklyn wins the tip, and then for whatever reason decides they're going to dribble the ball. There was only 3.5 seconds left. Dribble the ball for 2 seconds and then call a timeout. So then it was 1.4 seconds left. Boston goes into a zone off of the inbounds, not basically saying you're down three, you're not going to shoot a three-pointer. Caris LeVert somehow gets the ball, and Marcus Smart fouls him on the shot. Like, completely stupid. All he had to do was straight up. He was triple-teamed. Marcus
fouls him. Caris LeVert makes three free throws. They go to overtime, and Brooklyn goes 11-2 to end the game in overtime. Just absolutely dismantled. They scored 62 points in fourth quarter in overtime. Boston scored 34 in the fourth quarter and only 2 points in overtime. Like, it's pretty awesome.
So I think the moral of the story here is that Marcus Smart was a misnomer tonight.
Well, Marcus Smart also had to be restrained after the game from berating and chasing after the officials, apparently, Mike.
Because he didn't think that was a foul? Or that I don't was know, some but, other play? Or
I don't know.
You wanted the jump ball reviewed?
I don't know. I don't know. I just think it was... here's the report. Marcus Smart had to be escorted off the court after yelling at officials and chasing them following Celtics' loss.
Yeah, that's not a good look.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that the Celtics completely gave up. I can't believe they gave up 51 points to a Brooklyn Nets team that didn't have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant playing. Like, hey, I just couldn't believe it.
Like I said, LeVert went for 51, so that's pretty solid.
And most of it was in the second half. I mean, yeah. Most of it was in the second half and overtime. It was awesome. I've always been a big LeVert fan. Like, I think obviously after his injury, I kind of feel like, you know, I'd like to see him succeed, and just to see him go out there and tear up Boston adds a little extra excitement to me because I'm not a huge Celtics fan. So I thought it was pretty cool.
All right, do you think they can catch Philly?
That's a good segue, Mike. I don't
come on. I don't. Philly's in some half back. They're 9.5 back of Philly.
No, I don't think they can catch Philly. But
nah, I don't think
Philly's
so.
In such a precarious position right now because they are just a mess. And I know they're playing pretty tough against the Lakers tonight, but Embiid's out. Simmons, once again, this goes back to my statement I think we made last week on the podcast before Embiid got hurt, playing against your Cleveland Cavaliers. but Embiid, I don't trust the Sixers to diagnose injuries and handle them appropriately after what happened with Markelle Fultz. And the fact that we haven't heard a single word about Simmons, and I know they said they were going to wait 2 weeks and reevaluate, it doesn't give me a warm, fuzzy feeling that he's going to be back anytime soon. And Bede's like, oh, he could be out for 2 weeks, but I know you said you thought it was 2 weeks, but I read something just a few minutes ago that said they're hoping 2 weeks, but it could be longer. So that does not give me the warm, fuzzy feeling that Philly's going to have any kind of shot at getting any higher than they are currently. I think they might be fully entrenched in that sixth spot, which means they would get to play Boston in the first round. And that's actually a first-round series I wouldn't mind watching.
Well, that was the one series I said in the East in the first round that I'd most be interested in seeing. But you're clearly only interested in seeing it if Embiid and Simmons are healthy.
Yeah,
if
for sure.
One or both of those guys is not available, then that series becomes...
Come on, Shake Milton could score like 55 points or something.
He could, but I would think that that series would become a walkover. So the question here is, I think there's two questions or two points to be made. One is, clearly, Philly's medical staff does not have the old mid-2000s Phoenix Suns medical staff reputation where they're magically rehabilitating these guys. Instead, it seems like they're... I don't know. They're witch doctors more than anything else. They have no idea what they're.
Them and the Cleveland Browns medical staff from the mid, from like 5 years ago, should
where
really commiserate.
Where everybody was getting a staph infection.
Yeah, commiserate. Yeah, that was actually probably longer than 5 years ago. Because I feel like Kellen was on the team.
That was Kellen. That was when Kellen Winslow was there.
Let's not talk about that guy.
No, we don't need to bring up Kellen Winslow's current issues. At any rate. I think the other thing that comes to mind here with Philly is you start looking at, okay, so they finished number six. I mean, I don't know that if they can't get to four, which gives them home court advantage where they're 28-2, that's where they need to be. Whether they finish five or six, I don't think matters. So then I think the question becomes, and this is the interesting thing to talk about, if you're looking at which of those other teams would they want to play, and really Indiana... I mean, it seems like Indiana's out of it, but Indiana could still, I guess, get to four. They're 4.5 back of the Celtics. I don't think they're going to, even if they went on a hot streak, I don't think they could get to three. But if you're Philly, which one of those teams do you want to play? And this is prefacing the comment with you have a healthy Simmons and a healthy Embiid. Which one of those do you want to play, Toronto, Boston, or Miami in the first round?
Of the three, you probably... Oof. I mean, I still go back to say I feel like Miami's more dangerous than people give them credit for. And I feel like Toronto's just got... This is weird. I want to say Boston, Mike. I think you want to play Boston because what have they proven? I mean, I know Miami really hasn't proven anything, but what has Boston proved in anything? They can't win the Olympics? I don't know.
Well, they prove that pretty strongly. I don't know. I think of all three of those teams, I'm not sure that I wouldn't want to play Boston too. Toronto now has that championship pedigree. They now, I think, are a confident team, despite maybe, in my mind, I think it's a little bit of almost false bravado, but they're second, and they clearly are playing with a chip on their shoulder and playing well. Miami just beat the Bucks, the only team to beat the Bucks twice this season. I don't know. I guess if I'm Philly and I'm fully healthy, I think Boston is the easiest team for me to beat up on because they just don't have the same amount of size. You know, Tice is fine, but I don't know that Tice is going to give Embiid much in the way of difficulty, where at least Miami has Bam, and if Gasol's healthy, you can throw Gasol at that Embiid. So I think I'd rather play, this is with all the teams at full strength. I think if I'm Philadelphia, I'm fine with ending up with the Celtics if that's how it ends up being. I mean, clearly Philly wants to get to the four seed so they could have home court advantage. Their home and away splits, which we talked about last week, are ridiculous. They're 28-2 at home and 9-22 on the road. I mean, that's insane.
It's terrible.
But
you look at Miami, Miami's not quite as extreme, but they're 26-4 at home and 13-18 on the road. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, Miami's only 5-5 in their last 10. They won three, and they've won three in a row, so they've kind of
And the big one being Milwaukee. I mean, that's
for sure.
That's a big win.
For sure.
And then I guess going off of that, do you feel there's any chance Milwaukee gets the 70 wins at this point or no?
I mean, I still think there's I still think 70. So they got to go 18-3 the rest of the way.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't seem completely outrageous. I don't want to go through the Bucks schedule game by game.
I just pulled it up.
Yeah.
Well, we proved we were bad at that last week when we said there was no way the Cavs were going to win, and they immediately go out and beat the Sixers.
Right,
so,
exactly. Yeah, I don't think that exercise is going to be too beneficial. But 18-3 seems doable.
Yeah,
clearly, any game they play, they're probably going to be the favorite in. So,
well, they play the Lakers still. At LA, I'm just looking at this. I'm not going to go through every game. They play the Lakers. They play two games against the Raptors. They play a game against the 76ers and the Celtics. Those are their big games left. Okay. There's four games right there. And they play the Heat again.
I think last week, I think I said they'd get to 69.
Yeah, I said 70. So I'm leaning more towards you. So I'm leaning more towards you at this point. Yeah,
I think
the thing is, too, Mike, I think – they're not going to rest Giannis to a great degree, but I think they're going to start having him sit games out every once in a while because I mean they've got it locked up. I mean there's no one catching them.
Yeah, but don't forget he's played relatively so few minutes.
I know
compared to the rest of the best guys around the league. I mean he's only averaging like 30 minutes a game.
You don't think they're going to sit him for like, you know. I'm not saying. Like,
I think they're going to sit him for two or three games,
like the Cavs game. If he plays against the Cavs, that's stupid.
Right, that's but dumb. I guess the point there is that the games that if he does sit, are going to be games that they should win, even without him. So I don't think that hurts their. I don't think that hurts their chances.
Yeah,
I mean he's just playing so few minutes, and you know you look at the over the course of the season, that. That's got to help in terms of keeping him fresh and having them, you know, make this final push to see if they can get 70 wins. I won't be surprised if they get there. 18-3 seems doable to me. I'm going to stick with my 69 and say that they're going to stumble their way to four more losses and get to 69. But, you know, whatever, 69, 70 doesn't matter. They're clearly the best team. Now, that doesn't mean they're necessarily going to be the best playoff team, but they're clearly the best regular season team in the league. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yep. All right. One last thing on the East, Mike, and then I think we can move to the West. What do you think there's any chance that Washington catches Orlando for the AC?
No, I mean, I don't know what anybody would base that on other than Beal's been going crazy. But that being said, Washington's 5-5 in their last 10. Orlando's 5-5 in their last 10. They're 4 games behind. I just don't see where. I don't see the Wizards having
The Wizards are getting smoked by Sacramento tonight. They're down 21 points. So
right. So I don't see them having. I don't see them having an 8-2 stretch in them, where Orlando could go 2-8 and Washington goes 8-2, and suddenly things are flipped around. I just don't see the Wizards having that in them. I could see Orlando going 2-8. But I don't see Washington having a good enough record during that same stretch to be able to flip the script on a 4-point or on a 4-game deficit with the number of games that both teams have to play, you know, 20-plus games or whatever. I don't see it happening.
Yeah. Other bizarro one tonight, Mike, is Golden State's beating up on Denver in Denver. Like, what? How does that even happen? Curry's not playing. How does that even happen? Like, who knows? Denver is so bizarre. Denver lost to us at home. Now they're going to lose to the Golden State at home. What's going on with Denver?
I think Denver has a consistency problem besides Jokic, and even he maybe is a little less consistent than some of the other top 10 guys in the league. I just think Jamal Murray is trick or treat. Gary Harris has kind of been treat.
Jamal Murray 3-14 tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Jamal Murray can be the best player on the Nuggets night to night, but other nights he disappears or he doesn't play or he takes a high volume of shots and they just don't go in. So I think that and he's their second best player at this point. When your second best player is inconsistent, I think you can have nights where if they don't shoot well, suddenly Jokic has a huge burden on him, and if you catch the other team on a good night, then that's what happens, which makes you wonder, again, where they are come playoff time. What are the Nuggets, you know, what are the Nuggets end up doing? I mean, all those teams in the West, each one of them is slightly flawed. And so I think as you start looking at what those matchups are going to be or not be and who's going to have home court and who's not, everything's nice and close. Everything's jumbled up. I think that order, probably I would say the 2 through 5 are still up for grabs. I think any of those teams could still end up in any of those spots. I think Oklahoma City and Dallas are probably going to battle it out there for the 6-7, and then we could talk about the 8th seed. But I think that the Lakers are clearly entrenched at 1, barring some complete collapse. I think that some combination of Clips, Nugs, Rockets, Jazz are going to go 2 through 5. Oklahoma City, I don't think can. I'd be surprised if they creep into the top 5. I really would. I think they're more locked in that battle for the 6 or 7 seed with the Mavericks.
Yeah, I agree. I think the big question that I have, and I like you said, I think the Lakers are pretty entrenched because I don't think. I mean, Kawhi is going to be sitting games still. Denver's got a consistency problem. Houston, for the most part, has been playing really good since they went to this change. Obviously, last night didn't go so well for the Rockets, nor did it go well for our friend Spike Lee in MSG. I don't know.
Did you read the article? Did you read the? Do you understand what the controversy was?
So the controversy is Spike Lee's been going into his same employee entrance for what was it 28 or 38 years?
He said 28 years.
28 years, and for whatever reason. Dolan shutting it down. Who knows?
Shook hands. You saw they shook hands.
They shook hands, but whatever. Spike Lee went on First Take today. And said that he's not going to go to any more games at MSG this year. He's done with them. And that his wife's going to be mad at him because he spent $10 million on tickets or something. Because he's spending $300,000 a year on season tickets sitting courtside or something like that. And he wasn't
Somebody's got to tell Spike about StubHub or SeatGeek. Let him know he can resell those things.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
I would think he could probably get a premium for the Spike Lee seats.
Yeah, sit in Spike's spot.
You'd have to think.
Listen, it's just another thing to add to the Knicks. Did you read the press release, Mike? Did you read the press release?
Yeah, I read the press release. It's hilarious. Like the fact that they posted the photo of it's like a surveillance photo of James Dolan and Spike.
Evidence.
Shaking hands. It's just ridiculous. Like, why? And I mean, in a lot of ways, it's ridiculous on both sides. Like, I don't know what the truth is. I don't know who's spinning it one way or spinning it the other. But it's completely ridiculous that it's a story at all. And it's just one of the most Knicksiest stories that could ever come out. It's just, like, you could almost, I mean, it's sad to say, you could almost predict that something was going to happen. It's like, something's going to happen with Spike in the Knicks at some point. It just seems like he's next in the comedy of errors.
The fact that they said, my favorite point in the line is, employee entrance instead of using a dedicated VIP entrance, which is used by every other celebrity who enters the garden, is laughable. In a press release, I'm not going to get political here, Mike, but it sounds like something that come out of the White House. I'm just saying.
it just doesn't make sense why you would try to completely discredit this guy who's been your most loyal fan for 30 years. It's just amazing to me.
The assimilation, I mean, I'm not a huge Stephen A. or Stephen A. Smith fan, but he said that would be like the Lakers dragging Jack Nicholson and saying going after him or right, Philadelphia
you gotta come through,
going after
you gotta come
Meek
through
Mill.
A different you got to come through a different door.
Toronto going after Drake or something like that. That was basically what he would say, and I was like, you know, at first I kind of was like, oh, it's Spike being Spike and the Knicks being the Knicks. But then I thought about it, I'm like, you're right. Like, he's been the only person that has regularly gone to the Knicks games and had season tickets for 38 years, like whatever it's been. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life that they're going to sit here and put a PR statement out against the person that's most, like, entrenched with your fan base. Like, let's be honest, in the last 10 years, he's the most known Knick. And he doesn't even play for the team.
That's right. I mean, there's nobody else that you would associate with a Knicks crowd. I mean, you associate the Knicks crowd with Spike Lee and case closed. It's just, again, like I said, it's a very Knicksy story, and it doesn't surprise me that they've gotten themselves embroiled in this whole mess. And it seems like, as we've said numerous times, that until Dolan is out the door and has sold the franchise, you're going to continue to have these ridiculous stories. And it's just amazing to me that they would do that to a guy. And Spike may be in the wrong too. It's not like,
oh yeah, I don't want to. Yeah. Just, yeah. You're right.
Just walk in through the other door, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. I agree.
But it's just a weird, stupid story that is, it's, if you had to pick one of the 30 teams that Celebrity A was going to be involved in a controversy about which door they could walk in, you'd clearly pick the Knicks as the team.
Yep, I agree. All right. So let's talk about the eighth spot in the West, Mike.
All right.
I really want the Pelicans to get it, Mike, but they just keep doing things that I know that they lost to the Lakers.
The loss tonight is terrible. That's a terrible loss.
It's terrible. That's bad for them because that's a game they should have won.
Well, they got nothing. Yeah, they got nothing from their bench. Four out of their five starters, I think, scored over 23 points, and they still lost, giving up 139 to the Timberwolves. You just
Holiday,
can't.
27, Lonzo 26, Zion 25, Ingram 24, Favors 10. And, I mean, it hurts that Redick's out hurt. I mean, that hurts big time. I mean, when Josh Hart's the only guy in double figures off the bench with 11, I mean.
Well, I have a suggestion for the Pelicans. You might want to guard someone and not give up 139 to the Timberwolves.
Why didn't Jackson Hayes get any minutes tonight? Is he hurt?
I don't know. He hasn't been playing much. I think because they just, with Zion in there, there's no room for a second guy who can't shoot.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's probably what, you know, you're gonna play favors over him, and then when you take favors out, you're just gonna go small with four guys who can shoot around Zion.
You lost to a Timberwolves team that didn't even have Karl Anthony Towns.
I know.
Seriously, it's ridiculous. It's disappointing.
I'd like to see. I didn't pull it up, but for a while there, 538 and whatever the other prediction site. I can't remember which other prediction site had it, but they had New Orleans at like 67% to be able to make the playoffs. And I got to think now they're four games back, and they're behind three other teams that are ahead of them. Sacramento is kind of creeping in there, and as you said, they're killing the Bullets, the ex-Bullets tonight. So Sacramento's 7-3 in their last 10. Who knows?
Yeah, so
maybe they creep in there.
Just a quick rundown. So the eight teams right now. I mean, and San Antonio. By the way, Mike, I think we figured out San Antonio's problem. Send Greg Popovich on personal matters and let Tim Duncan coach the team, because that's what happened tonight and they won. There you go.
Yep.
Tim Duncan, head coach. I mean, we had made the assumption at the beginning of the season that he was probably going to be the one taking over the reins, right? I mean,
talked about that, the speculation for sure. I mean, I think the fact that once you add him to the staff, it seems like that's only a matter of time before, if he wants that job, that somebody in that organization is going to say, well, why aren't we giving the job to Tim?
I mean, I think it would be great, because I think he would do the same exact thing at the end of the quarter interviews. He would literally answer with like one word, because I mean, I'll be honest with you, if you gave me five voices, I don't know that I could pick out Tim Duncan. You couldn't, could you?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe, but there's no Tim Duncan quote that springs to my mind of, oh, I remember when Tim Duncan said that. Yeah, I don't have that. So yeah, I don't know if I would recognize it or not.
I think he's natural fit, and I think if he wants it, he'll get it. But regardless, I think you look at this. You've got New Orleans is four games back of Memphis now. That's, I mean, San Antonio's 3.5. Sacramento's going to be 3, I think, after this game tonight. And Portland's 3.5. So you're getting, those are the teams. I mean, Phoenix is out of it. Minnesota and Golden State are out of it, I'm pretty sure. So really, what team is going to catch Memphis? And I think it really comes down to, Memphis has a hard schedule the rest of the way. And Sacramento is a team we haven't even really talked about, Mike. And they're putting themselves in a position, and I don't know what their strength of schedule looks like, and I'm going to try to figure out here real quick what the 538 is currently saying, but I like that Sacramento's on a hot streak, and at the same time, like, I think Memphis has a good chance of holding Nov off, because they built such a big lead. 3.5, four games with 20 games left is a lot, in my opinion.
It takes, just like we talked about in the East, it takes like one team going 2-8 or 3-7, and the other team being up 7-3 or 8-2. And when you're talking about these teams that are kind of at the bottom of the conference, I just don't know that either one of those things is super. I don't know that it's super likely that any of these teams is going to go 8-2 or 9-1 in 10 games. I just don't know how likely that is.
Okay, I got the predictions now. This was updated 4 minutes ago, Mike.
Okay.
So the Pelicans somehow have a 50% chance still to make the playoffs, according to 538.
That's down 15 to 20% from where they were two or 3 days ago.
Yep, okay. Trailblazers have a 19% chance. The Kings and Grizzlies have a 13% chance, according to 538. And the Wizards have a 12% chance. So they're saying, Mike, that the Grizzlies and the Kings are more likely, are barely more likely to make the playoffs than the Wizards, and the Grizzlies are currently in the A spot. That's bizarre to me.
That's crazy. That's insane.
And wrong. Hey, do you know who has the lowest percent chance to make the playoffs, Mike?
The lowest percent chance? Nobody's been mathematically eliminated? Is that what
you're
saying?
No one's mathematically eliminated yet.
Okay, well, I mean, we're looking at one of the two bottom teams in the conference, and The eighth seed in the West has 30 wins right now. The eighth seed in the East has 17 wins, or has 27. It's got to be the Warriors.
No. According to 538, the Pistons have the worst percentage of chances to make the playoffs. We have a higher percentage than the Warriors and the Pistons. I don't understand it.
Wow, makes no sense. The Pistons have 3 more wins than us. Wow. I don't know.
I don't know how this thing works.
I have no idea why that would be. That none of that makes sense.
All I know is
I'm swearing off the 538.
Well, they also predict. Well, we're not going to get. I'm going political again. It's whatever. Anyways, we're not going to go there. But I just think, who do you think has the highest percent to make the finals?
Of any team?
Of any team.
Ooh.
Make the finals. I didn't say win the finals.
Right.
Make
I understand.
The finals.
Well, I mean, it's one of the two teams. It's got to be the Lakers then, because of the way you're asking
no,
me.
No, it's the Bucks. The make the finals. The Bucks are 41% chance to make the finals. The Clippers are 38% chance to make the finals, and the Lakers are 29% chance to make the finals. Somehow, I'm not buying this now. I'm reading this. The Sixers have a 28% chance to make the finals, according to 538.
Okay, can you just close that tab?
Hey, listen, I'm just reading what I see, man.
I know. Well, I guess they have a lot more analytical tools at their availability, whereas you and I are pretty much playing hunches. But nonetheless, yeah. I would put my money on my hunches over some of those figures that you just read off.
And the other thing, too, is that in the West, they say there's really 3 teams that can make the finals. Only 3 teams. The Lakers, the Clippers, and the Rockets. They don't think any other team in the West has a chance.
All right, let's look at it. Does Denver have a chance? Can you foresee a scenario where Denver
makes the final? According to 538, they have a 5% chance. I wasn't including 5% as a real chance.
Okay,
no.
I'm just saying, in your mind, is there any scenario where Denver gets to the finals?
No.
I agree, no. The Jazz, is there any scenario where the Jazz gets to the final?
I'm more up on the Jazz than I am on the Nuggets making the finals.
Yeah, I agree. I'd give the Jazz like a 1% chance if somehow Conley rejuvenates himself into prime Mike Conley and they get the right matchups and Mitchell has a dominating playoff.
Yeah.
There's like a 0.5% chance or a 1% chance they could make it. Oklahoma City?
No.
No chance.
Sadly. I will say this might be a little preview. I do like watching the Oklahoma City Thunder play basketball right now, Mike.
Well, I could see them. They can win a series. Like, they could upset somebody. I wouldn't be surprised, again, if they're the 6. I won't be surprised if they win that 3-6 matchup.
Yeah.
But they don't have enough. They don't have enough to get through 3 rounds
of
the playoffs and make it to the finals.
I agree.
Dallas.
They need an unbelievable Luka performance, and KP would have to continue to play at the level that he's been playing recently. But I don't see a chance. No, I don't. I think they're a year away. I think if Dwight – this is a weird statement to say. I think if Dwight Powell was healthy, I'd give them a better chance.
Do you realize I'm looking at the point differential? They have the 3rd best point differential in the conference.
Yep.
So maybe they're underperforming from a record standpoint what their point differential would say that they should be. But I give them a 0% chance of making the finals.
Okay.
I don't see how they – again, I don't
see
how
they – Okay, so you're basically agreeing with 538 that really the only 3 teams that have a chance are the Lakers.
Does Houston have a chance?
They say 26% chance, Mike.
No.
They have a higher percentage chance in the West than – the Celtics and the Raptors have in the East.
Nobody's beating the Bucks in the East. I can tell you that right now. Nobody in the East is beating the Bucks. I can almost guarantee that. The Rockets, man, I can't. If you think the Rockets are going to make the finals, you are just taking a huge, Evel Knievel-sized leap of faith. I mean, you really are. Because, one, you're reliant on Harden's your best player, and he's got a proven track record of coming up.
Is he?
Okay, let me say it again.
I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go on that discussion, Mike.
Okay. All right. Well, that let me finish that point with the assumption that James Harden is your best player. If he's your best player, the history of meltdowns is pretty strong. So I wouldn't put too many eggs in that basket.
Okay.
So then let's go to the other question. Is Russ now their best player, which is what you were intimating?
I'm saying it right now, Mike. Hot take express. Russell Westbrook. Okay. I think James Harden is the better player, but I think Russell Westbrook is more valuable to the team.
Okay. Do you want – well, but I don't know if I agree with that, because their whole universe, everything that they do in Houston is based around the ability to space the floor and shoot threes. And if there's no James Harden, then there is no this version of Russell Westbrook, because the floor isn't
spread.
That's true.
I will agree with that. But I'm really just saying, Mike, he's the one that's changed his and adapted his game and just completely transformed it in the last – since January. And that team has looked completely different since they did that. And I know that also came with the whole Capella trade and just kind of the whole philosophy. I won't say a philosophy shift, because this was their philosophy. They just put it in turbo mode here. But I think Russell Westbrook is he's a better player. And maybe it's just because I hate James Harden, and I'm willing to say that, or AKA the dribbler.
Can we get him a Marvel superheroes costume? The dribbler, like the Riddler, with all the question marks. Like, maybe we can put just
that's,
like,
well, that's not Marvel. That's DC, Mike. I mean a comic book nerd. Okay, well, comic book nerd. All right.
Well,
here, but
yeah, I got nothing. I got nothing there. What would be a good thing to put on the dribbler costume?
Can we put Slobber because he's dribbling?
No, you know that YouTube video of the dog just pounding the ball, the little chihuahua that was pounding the ball?
Well, that's a good one.
I think the thing said something like, "Hey Kyrie, pass the ball."
That could be a good
photo to put on the dribblers contest. Yeah, that was hilarious. I don't know how we missed that, by the way.
I don't know.
Last week when we were talking
about it until tonight when you told me.
Yeah, I just thought that was hilarious that Barkley called him the dribbler, and then Giannis is like, "I want someone who passes the ball." And then, of course, now they've kind of gone back and forth with Harden saying, "You just must be nice to be just 7 foot and be able to run around and dunk and not be very skilled." And you know, they're kind of going back and forth at each other.
I think if James grows his beard up, though, he could get to be 7 foot tall.
He could. What do you think? I think if he had, like, you know, it'd be cool. So he's kind of got the beard comes out kind of at an angle. If he grew the hair out the back of his head, kind of like as a shelf, and so it would be like this elongated, like almost like he had a board that, you know, went all the way through his head. That could be kind of cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I really think that whatever team plays Houston in the playoffs, though, they should really make a bunch of fat heads of James Harden without a beard and just have them behind the free throw line, so that James Harden has to look at a picture of himself without a beard.
That's enough beard and hair talk for this podcast. What percentage chance do you give Houston of making the finals?
To making the finals, I'm going to give them a 7% chance, Mike.
Okay, zero.
Okay.
There's no seven. Chance.
I think there's a world. I think there's a world. I think a lot of chips have to fall in the right spot, but I think there's a world.
All right, I'll give it to you. Only the Lakers, Clippers, Jazz, and Bucks, I think, are the only four teams that can make the finals. I don't think any of these other teams are making it. I don't think anybody's beating Milwaukee. I just don't.
Okay. What East team would you say has the best chance to beat Milwaukee?
I think a healthy Philly has the best chance to beat them.
I agree.
But
that's asking a lot, though, right?
One, it asked for them to be healthy, and then two, not only are they going to have to be healthy, but they're going to have to play really, really well. I don't think any of these other teams, I just don't know. I don't know how these other teams stop Giannis and stop all the other offensive weapons that they have.
Yeah.
And I don't see Milwaukee getting beat in the East.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else that we need to talk about before we transition into the segment that we did what we call a tease last week. Is there anything else that you feel like
I don't think there's anything else jumping off the page at me that
I don't have anything. I kind of talked with you about I felt like this week for whatever reason just seemed like a down week. Like there's not been a lot of storylines.
We're kind of in the dog days, you know. We're not quite close enough to the end where every game is going to make a difference in where teams are going to be seated. It's still hard to see exactly what that looks like, and yet there's not really a whole lot of.
That's one thing about this season, Mike. I really feel like a lot of the seedings we're really not going to know until the last week of the season. It doesn't normally happen like this, where everyone in the middle is just kind of clustered together. I mean, I can't remember a time that there's this many seedings that are going to be up for grabs in the last week and a half of the season. Can you? I mean,
no. It'll be interesting to see how these teams, how it plays out in terms of whether teams, let's not say tank, but whether or not teams are, let's call it, working for playoff position to slide themselves into this matchup or that matchup. It'll be kind of interesting to see what that looks like and what the rhetoric is about which teams want to play who, where, and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's something to keep an eye on as we go down the stretch. And like I said, I think we're locked in pretty much to those eight teams in the East. I don't think anybody catches Orlando. And then out West, you know, we've talked about it here, that eighth seed has been a constant topic of our podcast on the NBA. So
yeah. I think it will be until
I agree that one's going to come down to for sure the last week, and who knows, maybe it'll come down to the last day of the season. Who knows?
All right, so we're going to transition into what we talked about last week. We talked about the five teams we do not care to watch play basketball anymore, and now we're going to turn our attention to the five teams that we are most excited to watch play basketball at this current moment. Or who do you want to turn? Who do you automatically turn the TV on to watch if your children are cooperating? That's what we're going to say. Which doesn't always happen, right, Mike?
It does not always happen. So, in a lot of ways.
So, I don't know. Did you put these in like any specific order, or you just put five teams, or did you do anything? Or
I can put them into. I can do it whichever way you prefer.
I'm okay putting them in an order because I have them in an order.
All right, so give me a second to put my five.
Okay, well here I'll read mine off. I'll do that. Does that sound good?
You're gonna do all five and then we're gonna talk about them, or you want to reveal?
I can do one and then I'll do one and talk about it, and then that'll give you time to give me yours. So I'm gonna start. I'm gonna go in reverse order.
Okay.
So the fifth most excited team that I am right now to watch was a team I mentioned earlier. And it doesn't happen very often because they're not really on national TV, because I don't think anyone thought they were going to be any good this year. But every time I've watched them play, I really enjoy watching them play, and that's the Oklahoma City Thunder. So if they were on my TV more, I would probably watch them more. And I really enjoy watching them play. I think Chris Paul is playing really pissed off this year, because I think everyone kind of just said he's done, he's over. And he's taken a team that no one thought had any chance of making the playoffs, and they could end up with something like the fourth seed if they played the right way and their balls bounce in the right direction. They could jump all the way up to four and have home court in the playoffs, which I don't think anyone could have ever imagined. So I like to watch them play. I like Danilo Gallinari. I like SGA. I like all those guys. And, you know, the caveman Steven Adams, he's good to watch too, as long as his back's not hurt. So I enjoy watching them play. So I put them at number five for no other reason.
Okay, my number five is the healthy Philadelphia 76ers.
Okay.
Clearly, I'm not going to be watching much Sixers basketball over the next couple of weeks until these guys get back. But I like watching specifically Simmons. I just like guys who attack the basket. I like guys who can pass. To me, that's what's fun to watch, is a guy who can pass the ball. In the NBA, there's lots of guys who can score and do different things, but a guy who really is a transcendent passer like Simmons is, and then you combine that with his physicality, that's why I have Philly at number five.
But all right.
I may not get to see that team, so.
Yeah. All right. My number four team, Hala Luka, if he's healthy. I want to watch Dallas Mavericks play basketball. I very much enjoyed them at the beginning of the season because they were playing really, really well. They've been playing okay. I do like to watch him when he's playing because I think he's really, really good. And I think it's always fun when I get to watch. Like, there was the game that was on the other day was them versus Atlanta. And the whole game, they just talked about how Trae Young was traded for Luka. And I just thought, poor Atlanta. Poor, poor Atlanta. So I enjoy watching the Dallas Mavericks. So I put them at number four.
Okay, my number four team, the Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, look at us. There we go.
And I'll say, I'll double down on a couple things you said. One, clearly the main attraction in watching the Mavericks is just watching Luka and what he's been able to do at such a young age. And he's phenomenal to be able to watch. I think over the last couple weeks, Porzingis has really come on. To me, he's a fascinating guy because I think when you watch him play, sometimes you forget that he's 7'3".
Would you say he's a unicorn, Mike?
I mean, he's definitely a unique player. There's not been too many 7'3" guys that can shoot the ball like he can put the ball on the floor like he can. And he has flaws in his game for sure. He's not a really great post-up player, so it's hard for him to hurt mismatches by going down in the post. And, you know, sometimes, again, he's not as physical of a rebounder as you might want him to be, but you watch the skill level of this guy at 7'3" and how he shoots the ball and even how he puts it on the floor and gets to the rim. They're fun to watch. Dallas is fun to watch. And I'll be, whatever their first-round playoff series is, I'll try to do a really good job of catching as many minutes of those games as I possibly can. So, yeah, I have Dallas at number four, just like you.
All right. Number three, I have the Pelicans right now, even though they stunk tonight, because I want to watch Zion play. So, three.
Okay. Pelicans. My three is the Lakers.
Okay.
I like watching LeBron, clearly, from the time that he's been here. And just like I talked about Simmons being a great passer, I think the more you watch LeBron and the better he gets as he gets older, his passing genius is just some of the things that he does, the passes he throws, A, from a standpoint of how did he see that guy, and then B, sometimes I wonder just physically, like, how did he have the strength to get the ball from where he was to where that ball ended up? Yeah. And almost every one of his passes ends up hitting the guy right where he would want to get the pass so that he could go right up into his shot. He's just an amazing, amazing passer. And then I think the fascination for me with the Lakers, too, just fast forwards into once you get into a playoff setting, and we know that from watching LeBron here in Cleveland in the playoffs for years and years and years that the game slows down. LeBron becomes even more of the maestro than what he is in the regular season. And now when you have this other dance partner in Anthony Davis to be able to play off of when basically every possession in the postseason is going to go through LeBron in some way, shape, or form. And now he has a weapon that's way better than any weapon that, you know, any weapon that he's had, certainly since peak Kyrie, a different kind of weapon. And so I'm just curious to watch that as how that plays out the rest of the year. And then even more so, just like with Dallas, I would say that I'm excited to see what their playoff matchup is. And then watch those two guys compete together in the playoffs. So that's why I have the Lakers at number three.
Well, I have them at number two for all the reasons you just said.
Okay. My two is the Pelicans.
Okay. I just enjoy it. Listen, we don't need to get into a whole discussion, LeBron leaving, decision stuff. Every single time that I watch him play basketball, every time I get a chance to watch him, I turn it on. So, like, no matter what. And you know what? I got into a discussion with a few of my students today who, quote unquote, are mad at him because he left. And I was like, you guys don't even understand. You're fourth graders. You don't understand. Like, he brought us a championship. He left us the first time. I was scorned. I felt scorned. And he came back and, you know, whatever. But you don't even, like, they don't understand. They were so spoiled because they grew up, they had, as first graders and as kindergartners, they were watching a team in the finals, and that's just what they came to expect. They don't understand. I don't know how they don't understand if they're Browns fans, but they don't understand, like, the pain of watching great teams or bad teams play basketball for as long as, you know, we went through the doldrums, and he brought us a championship, and then we sit here and just to be mad at him is the most idiotic thing in the world at this point. He did what he came to do. He brought us a championship, and now, you know, I just want to appreciate him because, quite frankly, we don't have him for much longer, Mike. Let's be honest. I mean, I don't want to think about it, but as you said, Father Time is undefeated, and he, at best, I'm going to say he's got 4 more years, optimistically, of playing at a competitively high level, and then I think he's done.
You're saying LeBron's taking Father Time to quadruple overtime?
I think he can go. I think he can go 4 more years, Mike. If he plays at the, I mean, I think that he can do it.
How many more years can he play at this level?
I think he probably can play 2 more at this level. But I still think that his last 2 years he'll be more efficient than MJ was when he was with the Wizards. I think he can be better than MJ was with the Wizards. I think he can be better than Kobe was the last few years of Kobe's career. I mean, I don't think he can play at this level. Maybe next year, and then I think he's done. I mean, I think it also, I will say, it also probably depends on how far into the playoffs do the Lakers go. Do they go all the way to the finals? That's a lot more minutes on his body. And do they go 7 games? Do they go 5 games? Do they go 4 games? Like, what does it happen? So
this sounds crazy, but I honestly think that it depends a lot on if his team is in contention for a title. And I think as long as his team is a legitimate contender for the title, I just see him cranking out these seasons.
Who's the oldest NBA player to ever have a great season? Like, let's think about this. I don't know. I don't know if you have the answer off the top of your head, but I mean, I can't think of anyone.
I would guess maybe. I mean, I don't know how you define a great. Unbelievable. I mean, LeBron's going to finish probably second in the MVP voting this year. So you're talking about, has there ever been a guy as old as LeBron that's finished?
Well, I don't. Oh, LeBron's 30. I would say, is there ever a guy who's been in the league as long as LeBron? I don't like to put the age piece on LeBron because he's still 35.
Yeah, I understand. Right, you know, I understand.
But he's been in the league for, what is this, 15 or 16 years? 16 years? 17 years? I can't even keep track at this point. 2003 draft, so...
I keep coming back to Karl Malone or Kareem. I mean, those are the two guys that, you know, stand out to me as the guys that would be.
Yeah, but was Karl Malone's last 2 years really that good? Or maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, his last few years were not, but I'm looking at, let's see. So his age. So his year. How old's LeBron right now? 35. So Karl Malone's. Age 34 stats, 10.3 rebounds, 3.9 assists, 27 points a game.
Okay.
At age 34. At age 35, Malone was at 9.4 rebounds, 23.8 points a game.
Okay.
Age 36.
How many years in the league was he? Listen, how many years in the league was he there, though?
Age 36, 25 points a game. 9.5 rebounds a game. Age 37, 23-8.
Okay.
Age 38, 22-8.
Okay.
Age 39, he was 20-8. So, I mean, those are pretty solid years for those, you know, for that age. So, when he was 38 and he averaged 22.5 rebounds, that was 16 years in the league.
Okay, so my other thought would be, I'm not trying to turn this into a, but like how many minutes had Malone played at those points in his career?
Okay,
like,
I can tell you exactly. You're gonna be stunned. You're gonna be stunned beyond belief. So, Karl Malone at age 39, guess how many minutes he played per game?
36.
36.2. When he was 38, he played.
Okay.
When he was 38,
I'm impressed, Karl Malone. I'm impressed, Karl Malone.
He played 38 minutes a game at age 38.
So now I don't want to get into
And age 36, played 82 games. Age 37, 81 games. Age 38, 80 games. Age 39, 81 games.
Okay, Mike. So are we ready to say that Karl Malone is the most underrated basketball player of all time?
No, because Karl Malone was the James Harden of his era. He didn't come through in big moments, and that ultimately matters in basketball more than anything else. If you don't come through in the big moments, then
poo-poo on you.
Yes.
Okay, so
big moments are what matter.
Okay, so you said your number two team was the Pelicans. Sorry, we kind of went off on a tangent there.
Yeah, sorry. That was a Karl Malone deep dive.
You said Pelicans are number two. Do you have, yes. I mean, do you have anything to add to that? I mean,
you just want to watch Zion. You just want to watch Zion. Yeah, I mean, I hope they make the playoffs. Watching Pelicans, Lakers, Zion versus LeBron playoff series, even though that series would probably be 4-0 or 4-1, just the idea of getting LeBron against Zion for four games would be fantastic and tremendously fun. If I was a betting man right now as it sits, I would say they're not going to get in. They got to leapfrog four other teams to get there. And I don't know if they're going to do that. If they don't.
538 disagrees with you.
I know. I'm never going to reference 538 again after some of those predictions that you were reading off tonight. So, yeah. So you just want to watch Zion. You know, he's must-see TV in every way because he's such a unique player. Number one, and then just the highlight reels that he can produce are incredible. So Pelicans at number two.
Yep. the Wizards went down to 11% after their loss tonight, just so you know, Mike.
I thought you were going to say the Wizards were your most watchable team.
No, the Wizards went down to 11%.
I was about to get really worried. I'm like,
no,
I
think we're going to be in concert.
You must really be a
here.
Rui Hachimura fan.
He's not even playing. He's been injured. But I think we're going to be concerned. I think the Bucks are the most watchable team right now because we want to see, are they going to get the 70 wins?
I'm interested in that. I guess I looked at this partly not only through the end of the season, but in the, you know, the playoffs. Like this postseason is going to be a referendum on what Giannis, you know, what the narrative is going to be on the rest of Giannis's career, because last year it seemed like they were headed for the title. And I think if they had somehow won game three where they gave up a big lead against Toronto, if they had won that game and then they move on, and you know, obviously you can't predict that the guys for the Warriors would have gotten hurt because it's a totally different scenario, but I think the Bucks would have had a pretty good chance of beating Golden State regardless, especially with Durant already being compromised, and you know, maybe he comes back and he doesn't get hurt, or he does or whatever, but regardless, Milwaukee would have had, I think, a solid chance to win the title. And that was with, you know, two games into that series, it was still kind of, I think, the coronation of Giannis. And then those four games caused our narrative to flip back the other way, where myself included say, can he get it done in the playoffs? Does he have the requisite number of go-to shots and the things in his game that when the defenses tighten up and his teammates aren't shooting the ball as well as they have been in the regular season, does he have that in-between game besides the standstill three and the merciless drives at the rim? Does he have that in-between game that can get you a tough bucket when you need it most, like all the other great superstars in the history of the game have had? And so I think we're going to find out what he's made of and what the Bucks overall supporting cast is made of when we get into the playoffs. So I'm fascinated to see when teams throw, you know, weeks of scouting at Giannis and they have different strategies and they're specifically game planning night after night to try to stop him. What's he going to do? What's he going to come up with? And at that point, he's going to be a two-time MVP. And
but he won't be an MVP yet.
Though, I know, but
they
won't
announce until the stupid NBA awards.
But yeah, well, don't have to get into that again. But for all intents and purposes, he's going to be a two-time MVP heading into this playoffs. And it's, you hate to say that for a guy this young that it's put up or shut up time, but you win two MVPs, you got to start moving your team towards. They got to at least get to the finals. I think if they lose in the East, it's gonna be a real disappointment. I don't expect them to, and I think Giannis is gonna pass the playoff test with flying colors. And I think Milwaukee's gonna win the title as I sit here today. I think they'll get to the finals, and then I think whoever comes out of that Western bloodbath, I think that because Milwaukee's just so good defensively, and they're so long, and I think they can match up with the Lakers, and I think they have different guys that they can throw at the Clippers guys. I think, you know, there was a lot of speculation or a lot of talk last year that, you know, the thing that flipped the series between the Raptors and the Bucks was when Kawhi started guarding Giannis and made life difficult on him. And the Bucks never went to Giannis on Kawhi, even when Kawhi was having huge games, because they valued Giannis's, you know, weak side presence coming over to alter shots and do all those things. But I've got to think that hopefully Budenholzer has learned from that mistake. And if they get locked in a series where somebody just clearly becomes the guy, whether it's Kawhi or it's LeBron or it's Tatum or it's Siakam or it's Ben Simmons or even if it's Embiid, whoever it is, let's hope that Bud realizes, like, I have this amazing two-way menace on my team that can guard anybody. And sure, it's nice to have him lurking around the rim for weak side blocks and on help, but we all know that the NBA is a star-driven league. It's a player. Teams are driven by their superstar. And if you have somebody who on your team can lock that guy down and at least make life really, really tough on him, you have to do it. So I think as much as this postseason is going to be a referendum on what Giannis's narrative is going to be for the rest of his career, I think Budenholzer probably has as much to prove as any coach in the league, because you look at what happened to them last year, and I think that there was some tactical moves that I would question and that people would question about him. And now going into the regular season, he clearly has the best team. And so it's time to get it done.
I agree. I'm excited to watch it, and I'm just excited to see the way the rest of the season unfolds. And yeah, we'll see what happens.
Should be a fun stretch run here, last 20 or so games. There's clearly some storylines about what the seeding is going to be, and can Milwaukee get to 70? What's Zion going to continue to do? What is his stat line going to look like when this thing is all over? And who's going to be his historical comparisons? We're getting to the point now where I don't even know if there's going to be anybody. You saw the thing where he scored, I think, over 20, 12 times in a row or something. He's the only guy since Jordan, or the only guy, including Jordan, had ever, whatever that number was. He's just doing amazing historical things. And as we said a bunch of times, the only thing that derails him in any way, shape, or form from being one of the best players in the league very, very soon is injury. And it's going to be phenomenal to watch. And can't wait to see what his career ends up being.
Couldn't agree more.
All right. I think that wraps it up for a slow NBA week that we still somehow managed to talk for almost an hour about. So
thanks, Karl Malone.
Thank you for the deep dive, Karl Malone. By the way, Karl, amazing stats. Playing 36 minutes at age 39 and putting up 20 points a game. Kudos to Karl Malone, despite the fact that
Mike couldn't even do 36 push-ups at age 39. So.
Oh, come on.
I'm just messing with you, Mike.
Probably not in one set, though, man. I'd have to crank them out in different sets.
I can't do it at 35 or 33.
I'd have to crank them out in different sets, but that's another podcast altogether. We can get our fitness podcast going later. All right, thanks to everyone out there for checking out this week's NBA pod, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Hey, Hoopheads Nation, check out this new offering from Tyler Whitcomb Basketball Coaching Courses. The Steve Fisher Fab 5 Michigan Playbook by Brian Applin is now available. The Fab 5 were possibly the most celebrated recruiting class in the history of college basketball. Visit TylerWhitcomb.com to check out this great old school resource.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.